That damn song sucks. It put me to sleep. In fact, I gotta wake myself up again to do this damn talk show. Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together we are
the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Yet another Tuesday is here and
Wednesday
gone.
Wednesday morning, actually.
And it's gone. If you look up in the sky right now, you'll see Comet Hayakutake. Did I say that right?
No, you did not.
Say
Jim,
it for me,
Jim, right. Here, Jim, with the proper pronunciation.
Hayakutake.
Hayakutake. That sounds like something you order in a Chinese restaurant, but it's not. It's really a Japanese name for a comet that's in the sky, and you look up and you'll see it. But if you want to know more specifically where it is, we're going to go to the expert. We're going to go to Miami, Florida, and talk to the expert.
Dr. Jack Horkheimer, welcome to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Well, good morning.
How are things in Miami, Florida?
Well, very beautiful. A lot of people out here looking at the comet. Just got in myself from the Everglades about 50 minutes ago.
Is the Everglades a good place to view it?
Yeah, if you like alligators and mosquitoes, it's wonderful.
Now, this is Jack Horkheimer, the Star Hustler from PBS. Seen locally here on Channel 48. Okay, first thing we want to know about the comet, Star Hustlers, how do you say its name?
Hayakutake. Just drop the H.
Hayakutake.
Just drop the H. Forget there's an H on it and you're all right.
Hayakutake.
For Hayakutake, you got it.
My grandpa was in Korea during World War II and he told me he used to get drunk on Hayakutake. That was a joke. If you say so.
Okay.
So what's the deal with, where did this comet come from? And if I don't catch it this time, when's it coming back around?
Well, we now know that its orbital period is about 17,000 to 18,000 years, which means it'll be coming back not for 17,000 to 18,000 years. And originally we thought that maybe it was here about 18,000 years ago, but such is not the case. In the last week, the comet's orbit was redefined. And scientists have since discovered that the comet was here about 8,600 to 9,000 years ago, and on its last go-round, its orbit got disturbed. And now the orbit is twice as large, or almost twice as large. It won't come back again for about twice that, for about 18,000 years.
How does a comet keep going? Why doesn't it just stop, or why doesn't it crash into another planet?
Oh, they do all the time. As a matter of fact, a year ago last summer, comet Shoemaker-Levy 9, it had broken up to several pieces at the beginning of the century in the 20s, and made several passes around Jupiter, and then slammed right into Jupiter last summer in a very spectacular display. And our satellites have discovered in the past 20 years, have discovered that some comets have gone behind the sun and never returned the other side, which meant that they actually slammed into the surface of the sun, or into the, what we call the gaseous atmosphere. Many comets break up. They become totally disrupted. After several trips around the sun, there was one famous one in the last century, and we actually saw it break up on one of its returns into two beautiful comets. And then the next time it came around, there was just a meteor shower, and that was it. It had broken up completely into many pieces. So if a comet goes around often enough around the sun, it eventually wears itself out, because every time a comet heads around and goes around the sun, it is stripped of its outer layers of cometary stuff. So eventually, Comet Halley, which is the most famous, what we call the most famous short-period comet, it comes around every 76 years or so, eventually Comet Halley will be no more. It will break up or just disappear altogether. It'll probably just become less and less and less spectacular as the centuries go by, and then it'll just fizzle out or bust up into several pieces, and that'll be the end of it.
Well, what propels a comet? How does it keep in orbit?
Well, the same laws that govern the orbits of the planets govern the orbits from comets. It's just that these things are so far out. You see, comets are, when we look at the Hayakutake tonight, and it's incidentally for those of you who are listening in the area who have a clear north sky far from city lights, if you can find the Big Dipper below the North Star, you will see the head of Hayakutake just about 2 to 3 degrees away from the North Star. And it's not that difficult to find. And if you go way out from city lights, you will see a tail that could be as long as 50 to 60 degrees. Last night, the tail in some parts of the country appeared to be 70 degrees long. That's almost the distance from the horizon to the top of the sky. I saw it 2 nights ago, and it was absolutely spectacular. It was about 50 degrees long. A very narrow tail, even though the interesting thing is that this comet pass very close to us. As a matter of fact, it was closest to us on Sunday and Monday nights. And tonight, if you think about this and realize that, the North Star is the star directly above the Earth's North Pole, that's why it's so named, it's the Pole Star, the comet is very close to the Pole Star tonight. That means that tonight, Comet Yakutake is actually flying directly over the North Pole. And it's on its way heading for the sun. We're not going to have much favorable viewing for the next few nights, except after midnight, because the moon is getting in the way. It's getting larger and larger. And moonlight always wipes out the comet, the fine detail, but just like city lights do. But in the last 2 weeks of April, we have reason to believe now that even though the comet will be much farther away, it will be much closer to the sun. And since it's already about twice as bright as we ever expected to be at this point, we think it'll be even brighter when it gets towards the sun. So it will be smaller in the sky. But we now have reason to believe that the last 2 weeks of April, the comet will be quite bright and may have a tail 30 degrees long, and we'll see it right after sunset. The interesting thing is that Venus, after sunset, is this next week, Venus is at its highest that it's been in 8 years and for 8 years to come, and in the last 2 weeks of April, and the first day of May, Venus will be at its brightest that it's been in many years. So in the last 2 weeks of April, I would suggest that you all kind of keep a watch out for Comet Yakutake right after sunset in the west, far to the right of Venus and the planet Mercury and the seven sisters, the Pleiades. It should be really quite a sky show. Most amateur astronomers around the world are excited as all get up because this was a total cometary surprise.
It sounds absolutely breathtaking, especially with Venus up there and the Pleiades and everything.
Well, now, if you go out inside and take a look tonight, or any of your viewers, your listeners are listening out there, and go out and take a look, if you can see the North Star, if you can find the Big Dipper, and find the North Star is just kind of, to find it, you take the two end stars in the cup of the Dipper, you measure the distance between them mentally five times, and shoot an arrow down through those stars, two stars, end stars, or call the pointer stars, and about five and a half times away from them, but the distance, you know, the same as the distance between the two stars you measured.
Is that beneath or above the Dipper?
It is below the Dipper. It's always in the direction that the water would be pouring out. Like right now, the Dipper is in such a position, the handle is toward the east, and the cup is upside down, so it's pouring water like on the ground if there were water in it. So you shoot the arrow through the two end stars in the cup about five and a half times the distance between the two stars. You can do this when you're through with your show tonight and you go outside. You shoot an arrow, you measure that five and a half times, shoot an arrow down toward the horizon, you'll see the North Star. The North Star is not a bright star. Most people think the North Star is very bright. It's not. It's about the same brightness as the stars in the Big Dipper, even a little bit dimmer than a couple of them. And if you look just to the side of the North Star, to the west, to the left a little bit tonight, at this hour, you'll be absolutely amazed. You'll see what looks like a fuzzy cloud. That is the head of the comet. Now, that head, we know, is about 300,000 miles in diameter. That is, that little cloud, the little blob you're looking like, a Q-tip in the sky. If you're viewing it from city, where the city lights, and I can see it from my home here in South Miami, where I have a lot of city lights, but I can still see it. It's a little Q-tip in the sky by the North Star. That little Q-tip, the head of the comet, is bigger, it has a bigger diameter than the distance from here to the moon. Wow. It's a gigantic thing. And the tail is millions upon millions of miles long.
We're talking to Dr. Jack Horkheimer, the Star Hustler, on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show on WIF. And one thing I've missed about this comet are all the freaks running around saying that the world is going to end. I mean, what's the point in having a comet if you don't have a bunch of doomsday nuts saying that it means the end of the world? Have you had any of those in Miami?
Oh, sure. We get them all over the country. But the interesting thing is, you know, the people have been saving the doomsday comet. And if you want to know the truth, this comet, of course, is the closest comet that's come to us in several years. The comet came closer to us than Comet Halley did in 1910, and much closer than it was in 1986. This comet, well, for instance, Comet Halley in 1986 was 39 million miles away at its closest point, but in 1910 it was 14 million miles away at its closest point. This comet, last night and the night before, was 9.3 million miles away. Now, I was with a group of scientists Saturday night lecturing up in northern Florida, and it was very interesting because some of them were saying when Brian Marsden, he's probably the most famous comet calculator in the country, They said he probably just wondered if maybe he had a short, quick moment in the back of his brain when he was figuring out the orbit of this thing, and he realized how close it was coming. He just wondered if maybe he was thinking, really, how close is this going to come? Is this the one? Because, of course, we know comets have struck the Earth repeatedly in the past and caused many extinctions, not just the extinction of the dinosaur, but many, many extinctions. The interesting thing is that most of the doomsayers are very busy with the comet that was discovered last July 22nd, which is Comet Hale-Bopp, and which will be the big one next spring. It'll be actually, I don't know if people take it seriously, because it'll be at its brightest and best on April Fool's Day. That's a year from now, on April Fool's Day, it's April 1st. But the interesting thing about that was, I did a show on it, and I'll tell you right now for your listeners, you know, I thought for sure somebody was going to pick up on it, and nobody did. And I thought for sure the doomsayers were really going to try and nail me. It just so happens that on the day that Hale-Bopp was discovered on July 22nd, and this should be an even bigger comet, a better comet than the comet we're seeing right now, on the day that this was discovered, this comet was 666 million miles away from the sun. So I've been figuring that the doomsayers would pick up on this one because it's something so close to the turn of the century. Who knows?
Well, Dr. Jack Horkheimer, we'll keep looking up.
And I hope you all get a good chance to look at the comet. It really is special.
We'll get our image kits, fire and isolators out.
Yeah. Oh, you remember those image isolators?
What are they again? Why don't you refresh our listeners' memories? What is an image intensifier and isolator?
Right. All you do is you take two or just one toilet tissue rolls. When you're through with the toilet tissue, you take the little tube that rolls on. You can do it with a comet, as a matter of fact. It's wonderful. And you put up to your eye when you're looking at anything in the sky to isolate the image and intensify the light from it. It actually blocks extraneous light. And you actually will see whatever you're looking at better, especially the colors of stars, the brightness of stars, and the comets. So if you have a toilet tissue roll, just a tube, or you have, say, the tube from a kitchen paper towels.
That's for the advanced scientists.
Yeah, well, that's for people who insist on having a bigger, you know, viewing apparatus. How did you ever hear about these things, my friend?
We watched your show, The Star Hustler, on PBS.
You must, if you can remember that one, because that's an oldie goldie.
Locally, it's on Channel 48, somewhere around 1230 to 1235.
Well, I appreciate it. You're calling me, and I just hope all of you people up there get a chance to see it. It really is a lovely sight, and if you don't see this one, remember we got a biggie coming up, Hale-Bopp, on April Fool's Day.
We'll talk to you then.
Now, Star Hustler, real quick, how are your neighbors down in Miami? Don't you have a celestial body who lives near you?
Oh, yeah, quite a few, and they all want to come look through my telescope.
Does Madonna want to come look through your telescope, Star Hustler?
As a matter of fact, and this is the truth, she lives right across the street from the planetarium. And that's the truth. So does Sly Stallone. It just so happens that where the planetarium is located, they're directly across the street.
Sly Stallone plays a good boxer and everything, but Madonna's the one I want to know more about. Now, do you ever train that telescope in your planetarium there on her and
not on
the sky?
There are too many trees.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Jack.
My pleasure.
Jack Horkheimer, the Star Hustler, right here on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Keep looking up.
The phone number is 749-1444. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Check it out. It's up in the northeastern sky right now, about a hand's length underneath the Big Dipper. Comet Hayakutake. I didn't say that right again.
Just drop the H.
Try it again. Comet Hayakutake.
He said drop the H. Don't say the H.
Comet Hayakutake.
There you go.
Comet Yucky. Okay, this is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Stand by. We'll be back in a minute.
Trying to understand. understand how our lives had led us there. Such an empty surprise to feel so alone. Now for me, some words come easy, but I know that they don't mean that much compared with the things that are said. Lover's touch. You never knew what I loved in you. I don't know what you loved in me. Maybe the picture of somebody you're hoping I might be.
Movie Taxi Driver. Robert De Niro is sitting there in his apartment playing with his guns and watching American Bandstand, and they were playing this song, Late for the Sky by Jackson Brown, and all the kids were dancing. And then on American Bandstand, one of the kids took off her shoe and the camera focused on her shoe. Do you remember that?
No.
Jackson Brown, Late for the Sky, just like Comet Yakitaki. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together we are
the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Live from NASA in Houston. That's Houston, Texas. We have Dr. Mike Zielinski. He's the curator of cosmic dust.
Dr. Zielinski, welcome to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Oh, it's nice to be here.
How are things in Houston this fine evening?
Cold and windy.
How is the viewing? Do you have a cloudy skies, or are they clear?
It's typical Houston skies. It's overcast.
Humid with huge, giant mosquitoes in the air.
they'll be out a little later in the summer, I think.
Now, is it true that they had to build the Astrodome not because of the weather, but because of the mosquitoes. The Colt 45s could not stand to play outside and all the mosquitoes.
I think the problem was the mosquitoes were carrying off the baseball players.
Ah.
So they were running out their contract. That was a big problem, I think.
Now, have you had a chance to take a gander at this comet Yakutake?
Yes, I have. It's not the most impressive comet I've ever seen, but it's interesting to look at.
Well, you've seen better comets than this one?
Comet West, about 20 years ago, was a really spectacular comet.
Where'd you see that one from?
New York State.
Now, how exactly do you pronounce comet Yakutake?
Just like that, I think.
Don't tell me I'm getting it right, because I've been mispronouncing it all night until now.
You're pronouncing it right now, as far as I can tell.
So what is this comet? I mean, is it just a big ball of ice and dust, or what's it made out of? What is this thing floating around in the sky?
Okay, if it's like Comet Halley or some other comets we have good observations of, it appears to be basically an icy mud ball or a snowy ice ball. Basically, it's a combination of ices, principally water ice and CO2, methane, things like that, as well as rocky, dusty particles. And so it's like an icy sand pit, something like that, flying around. And there's also, as you said, there are organics in there as well, organic molecules, not just things like methane, but potentially things like amino acids and other organic type molecules.
Well, if it's got mud on it, you think it's got like worms and bugs in it?
Well, no one knows. It seems unlikely, but nobody knows.
So why do these comets have these long tails that you see either when you look at it or when you see old drawings or photographs of these things?
Yeah, that's basically as the comets get close to the sun, they heat up, and the ices begin to volatilize. You get geysers of gas propelling dust out of the comet, and they fly basically away from the sun because the sun's radiation pressure is pushing it away from the sun. And so the tail is actually gas and dust being pushed away from the comet by solar radiation pressure. So it makes a long trail. So actually the tail doesn't always travel right behind the comet. It always points away from the sun. So you can actually have the comet traveling in the same direction as the tail sometimes.
Do comets interrupt like radio transmissions here on Earth?
They have to get pretty close to something like that. I think the sun more or less does that.
Because something is making our radio station squeak right now, and it's not you and it's not us. We think it might be that damn comet.
Yeah, or it could be Russians jamming your program. They're worried about the content, something like that.
Hey, let's not start any conspiracy theories here.
So, I don't think comets do that.
Well, what's your interest in the comet? You're the curator of cosmic dust at NASA.
Yeah, our interest is in determining how the solar system formed. And our current picture of that process involves lots of rocky and icy bodies basically colliding to build up the sun and the Earth and the other planets. But some of these things are left over. They don't get incorporated into the planets as they get built up. And they get pushed out of the solar system by Jupiter because Jupiter is so large.
Dr. Mike Zelensky, you are the curator of cosmic dust for NASA.
Right.
I think we should have you on again sometime if we ever have career day here at the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, because I don't think there are any other curator of cosmic dusts on the planet, are there?
I'm the only one, and probably that's about right, I think.
What
probably
does a curator of cosmic dust do for a living, and what does this comet, what are its implications on your job?
The implications of my job are minimal right now. My job basically involves collecting, gathering, distributing, and studying dust from comets and asteroids, as well as pieces of spacecraft debris, stuff shed by satellites.
Do the Russians have one of you?
No, I'm the only one. That's probably about right. But in the future, NASA's going to send a mission to a comet. In 3 years, NASA's going to launch the Stardust mission, which is going to travel out to Comet Wild 2, travel through basically the tail, open up some collectors and gather dust and gas from the comet, close it up and return back to Earth in the year 2006.
It'll be quarantined, won't it?
It may not be.
Uh-oh.
Because you think about it, tons of cometary dust are landing on the Earth every day. And so if it was going to have an effect on our health, we would already have done that.
This is some pretty concentrated cosmic dust we're talking about, though.
Yeah, it's pretty concentrated. We'll be looking at it pretty carefully. It'll be careful, but I don't think there's any big danger of contagion and virus and stuff like that.
And so you'll probably get first crack at this this dust from this comet's tail because you're the curator of cosmic dust, right?
That's right. So if I keel over, then probably I'll have to, you know.
Here's an idea for candy. Make like these little sugary things that fizzle and pop a lot when you put them on your tongue. You can call it comet dust.
That's a good idea.
And we can put your picture on the cover of every pack.
Oh, I think you can't do that. I'm a civil servant, so I think you can't do that. Put Richard Nixon's picture on it.
Okay. What's Richard Nixon got to do with a comet?
I don't know. We'll figure something out.
We could put a picture of that Japanese guy that discovered Comet Yakitaki.
Oh, yeah. Or Hale Bopp, right?
Yeah, what's this comet Hale Bopp all about?
Hale Bopp is a colossally large comet. Most comets are discovered actually fairly close in towards the sun because they're only a few kilometers in size, but the size of Cincinnati. But Hale Bopp is huge. And it's already, even though it's very, very far away from the sun still and the Earth, it's already very, very bright. And so if it continues to increase in brightness as it gets closer and closer to the Earth, by the time it passes the Earth, in about a year, it could be the brightest comet in this century. So it could be really spectacular. Or it could be a dud. You never really know.
Where do all these comets come from?
Well, they come from the solar system out near Jupiter. And again, they're leftovers from when the planets formed. And then as Jupiter gets built up, it basically causes things to get pushed away and they get knocked out of the solar system. And they kind of orbit the sun very, very far away, about one-third distance to the nearest star. Then passing clouds of dust and gas occasionally push one in towards the sun again and we see it as a comet.
So your job has more to do with exploring the origins of our solar system and less to do with like looking for microbes and other living organisms from outer space?
Well, it's a little of both.
Anything lives on a comet?
Pardon?
You think anything could live on a comet?
Nothing that we know about could live on a comet. Viruses might be able to, or some bacteria.
See, now you're saying that, and then you're going to come down with this can of cosmic dust is going to come down into your lap. You're going to open it up, and it might have, like, you know, the galactic version of AIDS in it.
Well, I'll be pretty old by then, so it'll be okay.
When's it supposed to come back?
2006.
Damn.
So about 10 years from now. So I'll be pretty close to retirement.
When are they launching the thing?
In 3 years.
Cool.
It'll be a very cheap, neat mission.
We heard there was a mission planned to land on an asteroid. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the Japanese want to actually not just land, but bring a piece back. And that may or may not be occurring within 10 years, but at the same time as this comet mission. In addition, the Europeans are going to fly to another comet Weir-Tannen, again in the early part of the next century, and they're going to land two packages on the comet, which will send data back. And so it's all going to be happening within the next 10 years. They're pretty exciting, actually.
Are these guys, there's a space shuttle up right now.
That's right.
These guys on the space shuttle are collecting some dust for you right now, aren't they?
Yeah, they're deploying basically suitcase-sized collectors to collect comet dust and asteroid dust and also spacecraft debris. Those will be out on the Mir for about 18 months. Then they'll be brought back by another shuttle mission, and we'll look at them and see what they got. And probably they'll have pieces of these comets on them.
Think they'll have a piece of comet in Yakitaki?
It'll probably be on there, yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, Dr. Mike Zielinski, the curator of cosmic dust for NASA.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
Good night.
Bye.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, as we just said. It's 12:30 in the morning. We'll be here with you until 2 o'clock, at which time the original old school flavor will be here with your host, Chester T.
Never attempt to drive or walk through floodwaters. Even though the water might look only inches deep, it could be much deeper, and the floodwater currents can be deceptive. It only takes 2 feet of water to carry away many of today's cars. This message from the Ohio Committee for Severe Weather Awareness.
Thanks for that message, Rob.
You're welcome, Chris.
If you would like a bumper sticker.
These are not just any bumper stickers.
These are Chris and Rob bumper stickers, and they say...
Chris and Rob say...
Rename the Aronoff Center...
The Jerry Lewis
Art Center. Rob and I feel that since Stanley Aronoff was caught for being a shyster and he was busted for filling out his tax forms wrong and everything, we think that him being a shyster, we shouldn't have the Art Center downtown, the Cincinnati's premier theater named after a shyster like him. So we thought, let's name it after somebody that everybody loves, somebody who's brought joy and happiness to millions of people, and even done a little bit of a good deed. That would be Jerry Lewis. So we're going to go to Hollywood now. Let's talk to Greg Procaccino. Greg Procaccino is the film critic for the Everybody's News here in town.
Greg Procaccino, what are your feelings on our campaign to rename the Aronoff Center the Jerry Lewis Art Center?
I think it's dumb.
What?
Well, what do you want to call the Jerry Lewis Art Center for?
Here, let me have this one.
Welcome to the show, Greg.
Welcome to the show. This is Greg Procaccino.
Oh, good morning, guys.
You're the morning show. You're the
movie critic.
The movie critic for Everybody's News.
That's right. Well, I'm one of several, but yes.
How do you like writing for those sleaze bags down at Everybody's News?
How do I like writing for them?
Have you ever met Amber?
Amber.
Ever met Amber?
I probably have.
What about the Queen of Coryville?
I don't know who the Queen of Coryville is. I'm not one of your basic social types, my friend.
Okay.
I pretty much in the light. But
you're like our local link to Hollywood, are you not?
Well, yes, I'm one of many. I mean, I've performed there. I've produced there.
You know Candace Bergen, dude.
Yeah, well.
You know Melanie Griffith.
Yes, I do.
Ba, 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 boom. So this is why we're hitting you up and hoping for your endorsement.
Of the Change
okay.
the Arno Center?
We're looking for your endorsement on this project.
What?
Rob
what,
and I
what
feel like...
What you don't want to change the name anyway?
Listen to this, Buster.
All right.
We got a damn good reason. Now listen up.
All right.
Senator Stanley Aronoff is a shyster. If you recall, if you read the newspapers, you probably heard not long ago he was busted for filling out his tax forms wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He's a shyster. He's no good to the bone, like every politician's.
Okay.
According to Woody Allen, politicians are one notch below child molesters.
Above child molesters.
Below child molesters.
I thought it was above from the movie Annie Hall that was above child molesters.
No, they're... Either way.
Either way.
Either way, the guy's a sleazebag.
Okay.
We think that if Cincinnati's going to have a big premier theater, bringing in major talent like Tony Bennett and Tori Amos.
Here you go.
And running big-time, super-duper Broadway shows like An Inspector Calls and Miss Saigon.
Well, if you saw those, you wouldn't say super-duper, but go ahead.
They were pretty damn super-duper, if you ask me. They got helicopters and they got stages that fall apart.
Did you see Grease?
Who could have... Hey, was that the one with Brooke Shields?
No, the one that was in town now was with Mackenzie Phillips.
I wouldn't see it unless Brooke Shields was in it.
Well,
was
Rosie O'Donnell in it?
No.
Mackenzie Phillips that girl from One Day at a Time?
Yeah.
Yes, she was.
Isn't she old now?
We all are. She's in her 30s, I think. I'm assuming she's
okay,
in her
30s. Well, Valerie was always the cute one anyway.
Yes, she was.
So, we feel that the Aronoff Center, justly, should be named after someone who has brought joy, laughs, and guffaws to millions and millions of people.
But how about the Lou Costello Art Center?
That's not
Those
a bad idea.
Those guys are never funny. Abbott and Costello were never funny.
Oh, I see, but Hardly Working is funny. Jerry Lewis's film, Hardly Working.
I love that movie.
Haven't you ever seen The Patsy?
The part where he fell down and then yelled and like almost started crying and screaming. I love that.
That's high art and comedy combined. You better believe it.
It sure is. Plus, the guy does a good deed every year with MDA.
Yeah, that's right. You cannot take that away from him. I agree. But now somebody would argue with
now,
you and say somebody would argue with you and say Stanley Aronoff did a good deed by raising the money and getting the wheels
now
going.
He did his job. That was his job. That's all he did. Was
he's a senator.
Job.
He's a civil servant. That's what he's supposed to do.
Well, that's
he's
what Jerry
a cutthroat punk.
Well, that's what Jerry Lewis does. He does his job. So you see, they have a lot in common.
But his job brings laughter, peace, and joy to millions and millions of people.
I see.
In other words, we're looking for your endorsement, pal.
Looking for my endorsement on changing the name. Well,
yes.
As of this time right now, I really don't have an
opinion. We'll give you time to consider it.
Well, God bless you for
that. Now that we have Cincinnati's link to Hollywood on the airwaves, on the Chris and Rob late night talk show, mm-hmm. Greg Procaccino, what were your feelings on last night's Academy Awards?
Well, how should I start? First of all, the show was just too damn long. It's always too damn long. It's 3 hours and 30 minutes. Almost 3 hours and 40 minutes. It's rather dull.
How did you feel about the absence of David Letterman?
Well, let me tell you something.
You thought I was going to say the blacks, didn't you?
No, I mean, I miss Letterman. Someone asked me this morning, and I said, yes, I miss Letterman. I don't know what the big deal was about what he did last year. I liked what he did last year.
He didn't just suck up.
He made me laugh last year.
What did he do last year?
He did his top 10 list. He did stupid pet tricks. I think he treated the event with a sort of not necessarily contempt, but a kind of reticence and a lack of respect that self-flagellation and that mutual admiration society needs to have injected into it every year.
Did you ever get to attend one of those things?
No, I did not. I got about a mile away once when I was living out there. Now, I myself have been nominated for awards.
You're
like
an Emmy winner, aren't you?
I was Emmy nominated for regional Emmy. I did not win it. At the time of the awards, I was working out of town. But I was nominated for an Emmy Award, and I got my plaque, but I didn't win. Those bastards.
Well, let me tell you what I did last night. I had three margaritas, and I went to this other bar, and I was on my third pitcher of beer.
Good Lord.
And I look up, and there's like Claudia Schiffer, James Bond, and some other supermodel.
Well,
then 20 minutes later, they have all these supermodels dressed up like Braveheart walking down the catwalk, and then one of them comes out.
That was
some uber hunk comes out dressed up like a spaceman from 12 Monkeys,
And I was like, good God, somebody dosed my beer.
It was the most embarrassing thing I've seen in a long time. It was dumb. And when that started, I went, oh, my God, this is going to be another one of those ridiculous, stupid award shows. Now, luckily, that was the last of the really outrageously stupid things they did.
I was just glad I had the sound down and the bar was playing, eating it up by heart.
Oh, man, when that started, I went, oh, my God. But eventually, it calmed down to at least relative defendability as an award show. I was surprised. I all of my picks, about 90% of my picks came through. I've always been very good. In fact, a couple of years ago on your show, I picked them. We were there at 4 in the morning, and it was the year Hanks won for the first time for Philadelphia. And I predicted 3 weeks before the Academy Awards on your show who would win. And I was about 95% right 3 years ago.
So who won Best Actor? Was it Nicolas Cage?
It was Nicolas Cage, and everybody knew it was going to be Nicolas Cage.
Now, who would have ever thought that Tom Hanks would have gone from dressing up in drag on TV and doing bad bachelor party movies to this?
I like bachelor party.
Well, and I will name drop. I did a film with him right after Bachelor Party came out.
What was that, Bachelor Party 2?
No.
Joe and the Hurricane?
I wish. No, it was Man with One Red Shoe.
Oh, that was the movie with the girl with the butt, and he played violin, right?
That's the one.
You got his phone number?
Hanks?
Yeah.
No, I've got Jane Pauley's phone number. No, that's right, I lost Jane Pauley's phone number.
Damn.
Because I knew her husband.
I'll give you Timothy Leary's phone number if you can get me Tom Hanks's phone number.
I've got nothing to say to Timothy.
You know Gary Trudeau?
Well, he wrote a TV series I did on HBO back in 1988. And
the presidential thing?
That's the one. And then I would call, I could say hello to him, and Jane would answer, and she'd go, oh, hi, Greg, here's Gary, which is a strange sensation for a kid from Cincinnati to call up, you know, Gary Trudeau's home and have Jane Pauley go, oh, hi, Greg. Anyway, back to the Academy Awards. The only surprise for me, my friends, was the fact that Braveheart won.
The only surprise for me was the fact that cute little pig didn't win nothing.
Well, you know, there were a lot of people out there going, oh, I love that. It wasn't going to win because most of the Academy members who vote
are
humans, and they are actors, which is why I knew Mel Gibson was going to win, and I picked Mel Gibson. And
how do you give an award to a pig anyway?
You don't. He was nominated. The movie was nominated. And I think a lot of that, man, this is all theory, but I think a lot of actors, it's not an actor-friendly movie. All you saw were two or three actors' faces. The rest were all dogs, pigs, and cats. So, but there were a lot of people, guys, a lot of people still wanted that movie to win, loved that movie. Not necessarily in the Academy, but real human beings.
People like Paul Harvey?
Well, I did. Did he say he loved it?
Paul Harvey is a big fan of Babe and mentions it every day during the rest of the story.
Does he really? Well, it's such a sentimental, you know, affair. But have you guys seen the film?
No.
Of course not. We don't have any kids.
Well, I don't either, and I went and saw it.
Rob and I are still svelte bachelors.
I heard it was pretty good.
It's very entertaining. It's very original. It's very nice. I'm surprised that a film like Leaving Las Vegas, which got all of its actors and its writing, his director's nominated, did not get nominated for Best Picture.
Now, have you seen that movie?
Yes.
Did you like it?
Yes, I did. But boy, it's a downer. It's a strong piece of drama that will send you out and...
kind of like Ordinary People, huh?
Well, sort of. I mean, this guy who wrote the film actually lived the life of a guy he wrote about. Nicolas Cage goes to Las Vegas and meets his prostitute and says, I'm here to drink myself to death, which is what he does. The guy who wrote the book and sold the book to Hollywood did just that.
No, he didn't die, though, if he went on to write a book.
No, he wrote the book, sold it to Hollywood.
Then did he die?
The money, and then he continued to drink himself to death.
So is he dead now?
He's dead now.
Damn.
He died before the film was even made. But that said some pretty powerful stuff. So.
Seems like a lot of people were saying that Hollywood's kowtowing to Washington, D.C., and they didn't want to nominate anything violent.
Well, that's what a lot of people felt the knee-jerk reaction was to the movie.
But I also heard, like, you know, Get Shorty just wasn't that good.
Well, a lot of people, a lot of critics liked Get Shorty. A lot of people liked Get Shorty. One dumb thing. Did you see Apollo 13?
Yes.
From the moment I saw it, I thought it was a very entertaining film and extremely well directed, because Ron Howard tells three or four stories all at one time and controls the whole linear story throughout the whole thing. He doesn't get nominated for Best Director, but the Directors Guild of America, who helps to nominate directors for the Academy Awards, gives him their Best Director award. So where the hell were they when they were putting their votes in for Best Directors of the Academy? It was weird. And it was rather wasteful. But I thought Apollo 13 was probably the best all-around film.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. We're talking to Mr. Greg Procaccino, the film critic of Everybody's News.
Mm-hmm.
We have some Academy Awards trivia questions for you.
Ask away.
If you think you're such a hotshot movie critic, you better know all the answers to all these.
Or else I'll be chastised in public.
Or else we won't even be looking for your endorsement on that Jerry Lewis thing anymore.
Jerry Lewis. All right. Okay. Ask away.
What cameo role does real-life astronaut Jim Lovell play in the movie Apollo 13?
Yeah. You're reading these from the Enquirer. You're reading these from the Enquirer.
He's the pimp.
He's a what? He's a pimp.
Hey, don't give away all my secrets, pal.
Okay, I'm sorry. He was a guy in the movie. I don't know what was.
He was Roger Corman. Who did Roger Corman play in that movie?
God, I know so much about Roger Corman.
He's like a journalist or something.
A journalist. A guy asked questions.
Okay, who's Jim Lovell?
In the movie Apollo 13, the real-life astronaut Jim Lovell was the Navy commander who welcomes the astronauts back to Earth after they plop into the ocean.
And let me tell you about Jim Lovell. The man has absolutely no sense of humor and has a real bug up his ass.
He's got a hell of a sense of humor. He's a punk. He told me that he had an E.T. on that spaceship that blew it up.
He's a punk.
That's what he told me.
All right, what's the other question?
Are you ready for another one?
Yeah, sure.
What connection does the director of Braveheart have to the producer of Babe?
George Miller produced Babe and he directed the Mad Max movies, the first two Mad Max movies that Mel Gibson appeared in.
Take 5 points.
You're 1-1 so far.
Okay.
You want another one or should we save some of these?
Take another one.
Emma Thompson, you know who she is?
Sure.
Emma Thompson has been nominated twice for Sense and Sensibility.
Right.
Why?
Because, damn it, she's worth it. Well, because she adapted the novel Sense and Sensibility, and she got nominated for Best Actress. And she won last night. Her adaptation of Sense and Sensibility won, and I knew it would. I picked it.
Okay.
Hey, did you guys see The Usual Suspects?
No.
That was a good movie.
It was a good movie, and it was a good performance by Kevin Spacey.
Kept you on the edge of your seat, didn't it?
Yeah. Very good writing, and that won last night for Best Original Screenplay, as well it should have. It was very good writing, and it was an all-around good movie. I loved it.
Was it better than Waterworld? I saw that.
Now, see, here's where I break company. I didn't think Waterworld was that bad.
I thought it was good.
I kind of liked Waterworld.
Waterworld was cool.
I thought it was. Now, my girlfriend says that's the only movie we saw together that I didn't like, that we disagreed on.
So, being as how your Cincinnati's linked to Hollywood, when you go out on dates, do you go to a lot of movies?
Well, yes. I mean, I see a lot of movies for free now.
Let's make up our own category here. What was the best date flick of 1995?
Oh, since I was seeing somebody as well.
The Don Juan thing, wasn't it?
That stunk. Boy, that stunk.
Chris said it was good.
You could take a girl to that movie.
Yeah, I did.
I was dating a psychologist at the time, too.
Did you? Wow. God, can you... You know you're in trouble when Johnny Depp is the best person in the movie.
Marlon Brando plays a psychiatrist.
He was a slump. He was nothing. He was a waste. He was a big old blob. He was a blob.
He was a what?
A blob.
No, what was that you said before that?
He was. I was doing my Brando
impression. I know. I want you to do that some more.
He was just a big old blob of nothing. Of you know, Johnny Depp. I want to get in this kid's head. I want to understand what he's thinking. I don't want to give him his meds. Pardon me.
Oh, speaking of Babe, I got another question for you.
Okay.
The producer of Babe first found fame as the director of three of the most popular and intense action films ever made.
He already answered that one.
Yeah, Mad Max. Jesus Christ. I already answered that.
All right, go ahead. Number five.
They worked that into two questions somehow.
Did they?
What is the name of the real-life poet whose Italian exile inspired the story of The Postman?
Oh, Lundra, but it's not. It's...
His first name is the same as Picasso's.
Pablo.
Pablo Neruda.
What was the name of the one-armed guy who got his arm shot off in the war and he came back home and he made a movie and he won an Academy Award?
It's called Harold Russell. It was in the movie The Best Years of Our Lives. He got both arms shot off, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay.
Greg Procaccino, Mr. Hollywood in Cincinnati. Do you know much about the history of the Academy Awards?
I know a lot about the history of the Academy Awards.
How many Academy Awards were given to Jerry Lewis and how many nominations did he get?
He's received absolutely no Academy Awards.
How many nominations?
My guess is none.
Are you a member of the Academy?
No, you have to be invited. And there are people in this city who were living at one time. They may have passed away now, but there are people in this city who are voting members of the Academy.
David White?
Who?
David White.
No, David White isn't a voting member of the Academy.
Jim Scott?
No, I don't think so.
The truck
Ray
is Knight.
Ray Knight.
Yeah, Ray Knight. Let's talk about baseball, guys. Let's talk about
the opening day is in 6 days, brother.
Let's talk about the empty seats Riverfront Stadium is going to have.
7,000 empty seats.
It hasn't sold out yet.
That's the beginning. If those guys keep playing the way they're playing, you know, if you think Marge Schott was upset by the lack of crowds last year.
Hey, I liked Rob Roy. Did you see that one?
Yes, I did. And that was a very good film, and that was a great performance by Tim Roth.
Hey, I thought, Liam Neeson was good, too.
Who?
Wasn't he the guy? Ray, I don't know. Who's it?
No, it was Liam Neeson.
That's what I said.
Oh, well, I thought you said Ilya Neeson.
No, Liam Neeson, and then who was the woman?
Jessica Lange.
She was really good, too.
Yes, she was, but you can't nominate everything.
Mr. Procaccino, the film critic for Everybody's News, what did you think of Lieberman and Love?
Lieberman in Love.
Yeah.
Didn't see it.
That got the award last night for best live-action short film, Lieberman in Love.
See,
don't tell me that the film critic of Everybody News hasn't seen the best live-action short film, Lieberman in Love.
Some of those films that were nominated like the best foreign films haven't even gotten here yet. I'm seeing one tomorrow.
Have you seen the Anne Frank film?
Anne Frank remembered. No, I did not.
What
about a close shave?
Did you see a close shave?
I did not see.
That was the best animated short film.
Yes, I haven't seen it.
What about Solo Strokers Part 3?
Solo Strokers Part 3? I'm in that. Hey, wait. Let me ask you a question. Have you guys seen any of the local movies that have been being made here in town?
I heard that vampire movie has a lot of nudity in it, though, and I should go see it.
It went direct to video, but I'm supposedly going to get a copy of it Friday and watch it because there are a lot of local people in it. It was shot all over in Covington and Newport at the strip bars. There are like 10 feature films. No, that's a lot. There are like 10 films being made in and around Cincinnati by local, independent, and small-time producers that you guys should get in touch with. If you called Laurie Holiday over at the Cincinnati Film Commission, call her up and say, hey, where are these guys? Where are these guys? Who are these guys? And let's talk to them.
Maury Holiday, Cincinnati Film Commission. I'm trying to yell at Jim.
There you go. Because
how touching was it when Robin Williams came out and talked about Chuck Jones?
That was a highlight of the show. To me, it was a highlight because Robin Williams was funny.
That's the only thing I wish I'd seen.
He was talking about somebody, a man who really did create wonderful art as well as wonderful entertainment, and he did it consistently for so many years, and his stuff is going to last when a lot of these other films are going to go right in the toilet.
Tell everybody who Chuck Jones is.
He's the creator, he's the animator and director of a lot of the Warner Brothers films right after the war and into the 60s, and my feeling is his greatest accomplishment was How the Grinch Stole Christmas and One Froggy Evening. He was the artist, the animator, and he really hit his stride as a director of cartoons for the old Warner Brothers Looney Tunes.
What'd you think of What's Opera, Doc?
I love it. I love all those things. I think Chuck Jones has more subtlety and humor in his work than most human actors. Of course, that's a good thing about animation. You can make the people do exactly what you want when you want them to. But Chuck, a very talented man, and people forget because we're all too young. That was as much a part of the movie-going experience, i.e. cartoons, as the movie itself. Because people used to go in those theaters and sit there for hours. They'd see a cartoon and a newsreel and previews, and they'd see two films. And part of the deal was you saw these cartoons that these guys made. And it was as important to the total experience as seeing Casablanca was in 1943 and seeing all those other films during the 50s and 60s when he was still creating the unit there, because the unit shut down. And I think in about 1963 they shut the unit down at Warner Brothers. Yeah, but he was responsible for over 20 years of making cartoons that people saw every day when they went to the theaters. Go figure, huh?
I have one more question for you, then
sure.
We're gonna wrap it up.
Cool.
What do you feel about your fellow film critic, Michael Medvedev, and when he says that Hollywood is at war with American culture and values?
Anyone who sets themselves up as being the sole purveyor of, of an entire nation and their values and how they think, is starting off on the wrong foot. He cannot assume immediately or after rational thought that what he thinks, what he observes as moral values in America speaks for the collective. That's number one. Number two, I don't think Hollywood is, or else you wouldn't have had a picture like Babe, or Apollo 13.
That wasn't made in Hollywood, though, was it?
No, in fact, the only thing that was distributed by Warner Brothers. Apollo 13 was that kind of film. There's so much animation. There were so many children's films being released. There's so many PG-13 films being released that you cannot say that this is a, you know, that this is an art form, for lack of a better term, that is being premeditatedly designed to destroy the moral fabric of a country in spite of what those people want. Hollywood still keeps giving people what they want, or they wouldn't have the large grosses they've had.
Hey, well, you know, it seems to me like there's a cadre of people, I don't know what the number is, but it's not that big, who go to the movies regardless, and they keep raising the ticket prices, and that's why because fewer people go to the movies now than ever before.
Hey, you weren't at the movie theater Saturday night, man. The place was packed.
Fewer people go to the movies now than ever before, but with the ticket prices being so high, the grosses stay so high.
That's exactly right. But I noticed that even before I started reviewing it, I think it's still more fun to go to the movies than to see one on videotape.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
But audiences drive me crazy. I mean, so with the talking and the fat people eating the popcorn and crinkling the bags and all that stuff really gets on my nerves. But that's something you got to put up with.
You know what? Everybody goes crazy on baseball players making too much money. But what the hell's the deal with, like, Schwarzenegger and Tom Cruise and Demi Moore won 12, 20, whatever Jim Carrey gets, $20 million a picture.
Then
we're supposed to pay $8 to go see it?
There's
no way in hell!
But here's the thing. Here's the point.
We're cutting our own throats!
I agree with you. But, now, if they don't deliver, their salary starts to go down.
When's the last time somebody's salary went down in Hollywood?
To what?
When's the last time somebody's salary went down?
They have to
not deliver over like 10 pictures.
How much do you think Jerry Lewis gets paid now?
Jack Nicholson's not getting the money he used to.
He hasn't made a good movie in two decades.
Then you just proved my point, didn't you?
What about Jerry Lewis?
I'm saying that you got to make more than one stinker. You got to make like five stinkers,
well,
then it might go.
I promise you this. Watch. I mean, it won't be for public consumption, but you can bet your ass if Julia Roberts' next three films don't do any better, her salary's going to come down.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because Mary Riley opened up at fifth, and I gave it a bad review because it was just not a very good film. It opened up fifth in the nation, made less than $4 million, and then it fell out of the top 20 in the first week. It wasn't even in the top 20. Happy Gilmore has made more money than Mary Riley. And so, yes, and just like baseball players, if you don't produce, your salary will go down. The last 2 years, or the first couple of years in pro baseball that I've noticed, that people have to take the lesser salary because of caps and over budgeting. I said that to somebody on the radio the other day about, you know, before. I said these are people making much too much money who all get together and congratulate each other at the Academy Awards. And I don't have a lot of sympathy for their plights when if they do have a problem professionally or something like that. Big deal. They made a lot of money off of us, you know. And if you don't like it, you don't go.
Hey, Greg.
Don't give me your money.
Greg, how much do you think Jerry Lewis is getting paid to do damn Yankees?
In fact, my guess is because
Now you know people at the Aronoff. Fess up.
Well, no. I know. I'm in touch with the people who are.
I mean, the Jerry Lewis Art Center. You know people down at the Jerry Lewis Art Center.
No, at the Jerry Lewis Art Center.
How much is he making?
Well, first of all, they wouldn't know how much he's making, but a friend of mine who books the show in New York, who I just saw in January, put me in touch with some information about the show and Jerry. My guess is Jerry Lewis is probably making five figures a week, anywhere in the $20,000 to $30,000 range, which is why he's going to do it. He'll do it in America for a year, maybe longer. Then he's booked to go to England for 6 months and then France for 6 months.
They love him in France.
If his health holds out.
How much are the tickets going to be? If one guy's making 20 grand a week.
That's a lowball figure. He's making 20 or more a week.
How much are tickets going to be for this thing?
Well, that's why Broadway costs so damn much, which is why movies are still a cheaper entertainment value.
Well, Broadway can go piss up a rope.
Well,
yeah, you heard it here first.
You know, I heard they cut out the Acid Queen scene from Tommy.
Where?
When Tommy became a Broadway play.
They cut it out?
Yeah, because you remember the movie Tommy with Tina Turner was the Acid Queen?
Yeah.
Well, I heard they cut that out because, you know, acid's not good, and you don't be putting a Iron Maiden full of hypodermic needles.
Well, I have friends in that show, and I'm going to...
Ask them about that.
I'll have to call soon because I have a friend in that.
Put their genital to the fire.
There you go. There you go. Ticket prices for that show, depending where you sit and what the... If you sit down in front on a Friday or Saturday night for Damn Yankees, it's going to cost you over 45, 50 bucks, 45 bucks. Oh, yeah.
That's almost as much as a Tony Bennett concert.
If you go to New York and see Damn Yankees on a Saturday night, it's going to cost you 60, 65 bucks. And, you know, and the place is going to be packed, I promise you, because Jerry Lewis will draw from Kentucky, Indiana, all over the place. I'm going to see the show if I can get
on. France is peaceful, and people from France all the way over here.
Montreal, at least.
They don't have to go. They don't have to come over here. He's going over to them for 6 months.
Now, listen, Greg, you know people down at the Aronoff. I mean the Jerry Lewis Arts Center.
Yeah,
you can get Rob and I a couple of comps, can't you?
I can't get myself comps.
Oh, come on.
Unless I go in and review the show.
Hey, we'll review it.
We'll review it. We review shows all the time.
That's right.
Rob Roy, I liked it. What did you think of Usual Suspects?
I thought Usual Suspects was gripping.
There you go.
Gripping.
You guys, listen to your review. You're natural born reviewers.
All right, thanks a lot, Greg Procaccino. We're going to let you go to sleep. We know how you Hollywood types need your beauty rest.
Thank God.
Can we have your endorsement on the Jerry Lewis Arts Center now?
I still have to think about it. Get back
hey, I saw
later.
That show Lips Together, Teeth Apart.
Which
you,
one?
You were in that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you were really good.
Well, I saw the one where I played Buckminster Fuller.
You're like a hard ass. You're ready to beat up everybody. You were a good hard ass.
Well, thank you. It's in my blood.
You are a good punk.
Well, thank you.
All right, we'll check in with you again.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Greg Procaccino, he's the film critic at Everybody's News. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. The phone number is 749-1444.
Man, the show's just been flying by this first hour.
Yeah.
Is that good or bad?
That's wonderful. It's already 1 o'clock.
The Association of Performing and Recording Artists, APRA, meets at 7:30 p.m. on the second Monday of the month at the Southgate House, which is located at 24 East 3rd Street, Newport, Kentucky. You need more information? Why don't you write them? APRA, P.O. Box 14781, Cincinnati, Ohio. Jim, you want to tell me why these guys' P.O. Box numbers in Cincinnati if they're located in Kentucky?
Got me.
Anyway, it's P.O. Box 14781, Queen City, 45214, the Association of Performing and Recording Artists.
Since we were just talking about the Academy Awards, I have a song about an Oscar to play. We'll be right back.
These are the things I love.
The things he loves.
A rusty auto by a blue lagoon.
A blue lagoon.
Poison ivy in the month of June. The sound of robins singing out of tune. These are the things I love. The taste of ketchup on my apple pie.
It's apple pie.
The sound of fire engines passing by. A baby's face when it's about to cry. These are the things I love. Each snowflake that turns to mud.
Oh,
a lazy river where there's a flood.
Oh,
a broken flower a dog would flee.
Please.